Normally, we would chant the shlokas the way Prabhupada wanted us to do, but we don't have any markers. You know why we don't have any markers, Kishore Krishna? Because you borrowed them for Janmasmi, and they're disappeared, as they say. You know what I mean? Those little markers that we use? That's what you use to make your signs. And then now that we don't know where they are. No, you don't. Well, all right, because so. Yeah, well, you shouldn't have used them. You should have gotten the proper things to make signs with. So now we can't do class properly. So this is Canto 10, Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods for Lord Krishna in the Womb. It's text number 39. I'll read it anyway. You can listen. Nate bhavishyesha bhavasya karanam vina vinodam vattatarkayamahe bhavo nirodas tityarapya vidyaya krita yatastvayabhi abhayasrayatman matni, excuse me, krita yatastvai abhayasrayatmani. Try to say after me. Na. Translation. O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in the material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no cause other than your pleasure potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when the living entities are conducted by your external energy. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15.7, Mamaivamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, and thus they are qualitatively one with the Lord. We can understand that when the Supreme Lord appears or disappears as an incarnation, there is no cause, no other cause than his pleasure potency. We cannot force the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear. As he says in Bhagavad Gita 4.7, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata tanam dharmasya tatatmanam srijam yaham. Whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. When there is a need to diminish a burden created by the demons, the Supreme Godhead can do it in many ways because he has multifarious energies. There is no need for him to come as an incarnation since he's not forced to do anything like ordinary living entities. The living entities come to this material world in the spirit of enjoyment, but because they want to enjoy without Krishna, Krishna bahir mukha hoya bhojavanjakare, they suffer birth, death, old age, and disease under the control of the illusory energy. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, however, no such causes are involved. His descent is an act of his pleasure potency. We should always remember this distinction between the Lord and the ordinary living entity and not uselessly argue that the Lord cannot come. There are philosophers who do not believe in the Lord's incarnation and who ask, why should the Supreme Lord come? But the answer is, why should he not come? Why should he be controlled by the desire of the living entity? The Lord is free to do whatever he likes. Therefore, this verse says, Vina vinodam bhattatarkayamahe. It is only for his pleasure that he comes, although he does not need to come. When the living entity comes to this world for material enjoyment, they are entangled in karma and karma phala by the Lord's illusory energies. But if one seeks shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, one is again situated in his original liberated state. As stated here, Krita yatastvai abhayasri atmani. One who seeks shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is always fearless. Because we are dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should give up the idea that without Krishna, we can enjoy freedom in this material world. This idea is the reason we have become entangled. Now it is our duty to seek shelter again at the Lord's lotus feet. This shelter is described as abhaya, or fearless, since Krishna is not subject to birth, death, old age, or disease. And since we are part and parcel of Krishna, we are also not subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. But we have become subject to these illusory problems because of our forgetfulness of Krishna and our position as his eternal servants. Jivara Sarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. Therefore, if we practice devotional service by always thinking of the Lord, always glorifying him, and always chanting about him, as described in text 37, Shrinvan Grinan Sam Smarayam Chachintayan, we will be reinstated in our original constitutional position and thus be saved. The demigods therefore encourage Devaki not to fear Kamsa, but to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was already within her womb. Nate bhavas yesha bhavas shakaranam. Vina vinodam vattaraka yamahe bhavo niroda stittirapi avidyaya krita yatastvaya bhavayasvayatmani. O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no other cause than your pleasure potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. So this verse contrasts reasons for the appearance of the Lord and of the ordinary living entities, at least how they come into the material world. So quite differently. it says here, abhavasya bhavasya karanam. The Lord is described as abhavasya. That means to say, of whom there is no birth, death, or maintenance, abhavasya. But still, bhavasya karanam, he still seems to appear here. He has no appearance, but yet he appears. It's, in Sanskrit, it's a little stated in a paradoxical way, abhavasya. He does not take on any kind of material existence, but bhavasya karanam, still he has a cause for becoming manifest. So we can't argue about that because it is simply the note. He does so at his pleasure. Otherwise, if you use taraka yamahe, if one argues, if we argue about it, then it's incomprehensible. And Prabhupada mentions these various philosophers who make sorts of speculations why they don't like it that God should come, or somehow or other there's no need, or don't believe in the Lord's incarnation, thinking it's useless. Anyway, he does it for his pleasure. As he says, the stated reason that he comes to destroy the demons is not really, but that's what he does when he comes. He sets things right. The demons become destroyed and the devotees become reestablished. But still, his personal appearance isn't necessary to accomplish these things. He has so many different energies, and he could take care of it just by his potencies working. So ultimately, he comes because it pleases him to do so. That's why. And it's not that Krishna has to give an account of himself to some argumentative guy. He does it because he wants. He wants to do it. And that we have to say. But Vinod, the idea this is his pastime, we use this word for Krishna's activities, Leela, pastime. Leela means play, pastime. And normally we use the word play in the material world, to contrast to those activities that we do out of pleasure, not because we have to. I guess play is contrasted to work. Work are the things we do that we have to do, whether we're forced to do, even though we don't want, still we have to do it. That's what's called work. And what's called play means the things you do just out of the pleasure of doing it, and for nothing else. So that's why we use this word for Krishna's pastimes. And for his coming to the material world, same thing, it's Leela. Because it says, you are not forced to come to this world by any cause. So, Krishna's coming and the coming of the living entities are two different kinds of things, and they cannot be confused. Because the living entity here, I don't know the source of this quotation, Krishna bahir mukha haya bhoja vanchakare, he wants to enjoy separately from Krishna. Bahir mukha means he's turned his face away from Krishna. So the living entity comes to the material world because he wants to enjoy without Krishna. In the spiritual world, one enjoys with Krishna. But that means that we use the same word, enjoy, but it's not sense gratification. It's enjoy because the living entity is not suffering. He's actually feeling a supreme bliss. And of course, that's always a puzzle. Why, feeling supreme bliss, does he come to the material world? How is it possible to fall down? If you're so happy there, you have Krishna and everything, then why come here? And the answer is, you want to enjoy without Krishna. That's why. Because it's two different things. Enjoying with Krishna means that Krishna is the center, and that Krishna is the center means that the activities of sense gratification in the material world are dedicated to satisfying the senses of Krishna. It's the center of enjoyment is different. So the individual living entity is not the center of enjoyment. Krishna is the center of enjoyment. And the living entities are dedicated to pleasing Krishna's senses. It's like here, in the material world, every living entity has an avidity, an eagerness to satisfy his own senses. And in part of that project, he tries to enlist everyone else to assist in this project of gratifying his own senses. You are, other living entities are sense objects. What happens to those living entities in the course of satisfying his senses is not of such immediate concern. He doesn't care for the living, the other beings for their own sake, but only for what they can contribute to him. This is what we call selfishness. The other exists for me only as insofar as the other contributes to my happiness. So people have expressions like, I love chicken, for example. What kind of love is that? What happens to the chicken because of your love? It means his head gets chopped off. And so then you eat his body, and that's what you say by, I love chicken. But if you love chicken, you would actually, so you don't love. See, love means to actually want the other to be. So if you actually love chicken, the last thing you do is kill them. You'd say to this chicken, I love you. And that means you have a full right to enjoy your chicken life to the height of your chicken powers. And I should be working to make the world nice for chickens, which does not involve, you know, keeping them in cages, slaughtering them, and transporting their corpses to become chicken McNuggets. So I don't care for the happiness of the chicken. I say I love chicken, but I don't care for chicken's happiness. So you can say that there's love, but it's not. There's an old Russian proverb that goes, the fox kisses the chicken right down to the tail feathers. So this is the kissing that goes on in the material world under the name of love. So of course, human beings, one does this to other human beings also. You don't eat them, not usually. But they have this arrangement called love in the material world. But mostly, one person then cares for another. You gratify my senses, so therefore I want to maintain you and keep you alive and keep you in good shape. So therefore, I give you some money or allowance or whatever, or do some service for you. But only insofar, only to the point that you gratify my senses. If the sense gratification that you give me turns off, or I find something else, then we terminate the relationship. So the thing is that this is selfishness. In other words, the other, whether the other is something animate or something inanimate, exists or has value for me or is important only insofar as it gratifies my senses. And as part, I may have to gratify that living being's senses. But I do that, just like we somehow people are forced to gratify the senses of the animals they eat up to the point where they become fat and succulent. Then when that's all accomplished, then sense gratification of the animal stops and mine begins. But in the material world, we're selfish, but people do service for others because of the expectation that I'll get more out of it than I'm putting in. They make this calculation, of course. If this is a business calculation, you get as much as you can while giving as little as possible in exchange. This is how business works. These are all transactions that take place under the material. So you very rarely actually see transactions that aren't selfish. And when people engage in selfless acts, in many cases, you find that actually beneath it all, there's something selfish there anyway. So this is the activities of sense gratification. It's based on this selfishness in which I become the center of enjoyment and I try to engage everything else in my service. I cannot do this in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, Krishna is the center of enjoyment. What makes the business, the activities of the material world so nasty is that the living entities who are trying to enjoy here are all doing so in artificial imitation of Krishna. In the spiritual world, there's one center of enjoyment, who is Krishna. Now, Krishna is actually the authentic center of enjoyment. Living entities in the material world imitate Krishna as becoming selfish centers of enjoyment. We are all inauthentic centers of enjoyment. We're imitation. But Krishna is, in fact, the absolute truth. He's not some little tiny living entity trying to become, pretend he's the center around whom the world revolves. We say to people, you think the world revolves around you. You know, mother to teenage child, you think the world revolves around you. So we make that charge, and somebody is trying to use us for their sense gratification. You think the world revolves around you. And it's false, because of course the world doesn't. I think, of course, really the world should revolve around me, but that's another thing. When we finally say that to Krishna, you think the world revolves around you. That's true. He's the one being around whom everything does actually revolve. So one charge that sometimes people say, is it Krishna on an ego trip? He thinks the world revolves around him. It's not an ego trip. Ego trip, we mean false ego. Our false ego is we think we're God. When Krishna thinks he's God, he's right on. And so he's the only one. And when people say that, Krishna's on an ego trip, or God thinks he's a big deal, you can see right away, they don't want to acknowledge, yes, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is called Krishna Bahirmukhi. You turn your face away from Krishna. You want to say, we need a level playing field here. No, I don't know why you should become God. So the kind of enjoyment in the spiritual world that's there and from which we derive supreme bliss has Krishna as the center. There, everyone is in agreement that Krishna is, in fact, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he is, in fact, the center of enjoyment, and that we are simply to be engaged properly in serving him. And then everything is fine, except for this one fact, that Krishna is the center of enjoyment. So somehow or other, don't ask me how exactly, we get this little tinge of what's called envy. That why should Krishna be the center of enjoyment? Why can't I have that position? So Prabhupada, right from the very beginning, when the servant wants to take the position of the all-powerful master, he comes to the material world. So this is a whole unnatural situation for the living entities, because the center is gone. Krishna is gone. And what you have is a whole lot of little living entities, none of whom is the center, and each of whom is trying to become the center. And they're constantly quarreling with each other because one being, each of them is trying to, I'm the center and I'm the enjoyer and you're the enjoyed. But the enjoyed protests, no, no, I am the enjoyer and you're the enjoyed. And therefore they have to become in conflict all the time. Just like so many dots on a page, and if each little dot is the center of a circle, then all the circles, all the circumferences of the circles, they conflict. They intersect and there's conflict. So the living entity wants to forget Krishna. Somehow or other in the spiritual world, wants to change the basic arrangement in which Krishna is not at the center of enjoyment, and I am in fact the center of enjoyment, meaning that I'm God. So we don't want our identity. We don't want knowledge. We don't want truth. The truth is Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and I'm the servant. So we've got a fundamental quarrel with the reality. We somehow think that Krishna just happens to accidentally to have become the absolute truth. That he is in that position because he got there by revolution or something. Or he has a contingent hold on the position of God. You see, that's not the way it is. Krishna is the absolute truth, always has been, always will be. It's not like a position he holds. You know, living beings in the material world, they come up to their positions by fair means or foul. They keep them for a while and they lose them. That's the way it is with presidents of the United States or kings or demigods even. Every time there's a change of manu, one whole set of demigods from Indra down or leave office and a whole another bunch comes in. Takes those positions. The word Indra refers to a post, and somebody happens to be the Indra, and so for 71 yuga cycles gets to be Indra. Then that manu goes, and there's a whole change of administration. You know, just like in Washington, D.C., you know, when the Republicans come in, the Democrats, you know, pack up their files and go off to their think tanks or whatever, and wait for their next chance to come in, and a whole new bunch of guys comes in, takes over the machinery of government, goofs around with it until everybody becomes disgusted, and then the other guys come in and they switch like that. And this is how they take their turns, and so there's some legal way of attaining office, or there are other ways where the laws don't apply anymore and one just becomes, you know, a warlord and fights the other warlords until one finally defeats all the others and now I'm the government, you know, and all challengers are over. So these are different methods, like revolution or anarchy or some constitutional ways. People come into office, take those offices, keep them for a while and then lose them. But Krishna does not become the absolute truth in that way. He always has been. He is the absolute truth. That's what we mean when we say Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why Prabhupada likes that phrase. You see, if you just say God, then with just in that idea of God, there's a notion like Indra, a god, that somebody who happens to have that position on a contingent basis, a circumstantial basis. When we say Supreme Personality of Godhead, you can't have that idea. There's the Godhead, which is the absolute truth, the ultimate source of all energies. And that ultimate source of all energies, one of the features is Bhagavan, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's Krishna's position. Unassailable, unshakable, has always been there, always will be there. And you can't say any reason why should Krishna be God. He just always has been, and that's who's there. But the living entities in the material world, they have a quarrel with this reality of things. Why should Krishna be God? Why can't I be God? So what we demand is when we want to become God, when we want to take the position, which we want to become the center of enjoyment instead of having Krishna be the center of enjoyment, we get this what Bhagavatam calls a reversed mentality, viparyaya ashmatihi. hand, in that reversed, perverted mentality, I am the enjoyer. So in the spirit, here you can see how everyone here has this avidity. Let me gratify my senses and let everyone else be engaged in my sense gratification. That's a very, very, very deep drive. So in the spiritual world, that same sort of avidity that people have for their own sense gratification, we have for Krishna sense gratification. That deep appetite, like when you're really, really hungry and you just got to put something in your belly, and you know, you just got to do it no matter what. And if it means shooting your best friend in the head and starting gnawing on his arm, well, sometimes that happens. So this eagerness that is there for people to serve their own sin, that drive. In the spiritual world, that eagerness is to satisfy Krishna's senses, not mine, Krishna's. So Krishna becomes a center of enjoyment. So somehow or other, don't like that notion. So Krishna has to provide us with an illusion. So that's our coming here, our coming into the material world. Bhavo nirodha sthitir api avidyaya. This takes place because of ignorance. We have to become ignorant. We are demanding of Krishna, I don't like reality. Krishna says, okay, here's an arrangement of illusion. And that's what he gives us, illusion. Sometimes the question is asked, somebody said to me, it seems like Krishna's pretty nasty. He says, okay, you don't want to serve me. Okay, you want to be God. But why does he send us to the material world where there's birth and death and old age and disease? That's just, say, okay, you want to be severed from me, but you have to have all these nasty things. If he was really magnanimous, he would set it up so we could be God, but not have birth, death, old age, and disease, and matter, and all those things. That's what he would do. So why did he set it? This is like his kind of vicious little thing he does to us. Still showing their hostility toward Krishna. Right? Can I have some water? Still showing their hostility toward Krishna. But actually, try to understand what Krishna has to do. To be in a state of spirit means, what are the characteristics of spirit? Sat, Chit, Ananda. It's actually one thing, Brahman. But there's three characteristics. There's eternal knowledge that is full of bliss. But when I demand ignorance, how can I have spiritual existence? I have to have something else. What is that something else? That something else has to be matter. It cannot be spirit, because we're demanding avidya. We're demanding ignorance. To have Satyat Ananda without Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it don't work. Of course, there is the Brahma Jyoti. But in the Brahma Jyoti, there's not really a satisfactory solution to our problem, because we're really non-manifest there. I don't know, sometimes the Mayavadis who extol the Brahma Jyoti refer to it as consciousness, but it's not consciousness either. It's just sat. But there's no knower, there's no act of knowing, there's no thing known. I don't see how that's... it's a